Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, estate planning, so important, particularly in Washington State. The current tax environment in Washington is getting, well, you said last week, is very much in flux.
Yeah, that's
right. It's not a stable situation.
It's
We're not sure. Things, millionaires taxed, everything's going on. It's really affecting people's estate planning. And we talked about a lot of the problems last week. You want to review that, and we'll talk about more solutions this time.
Yeah, so we talked about that in Washington State, there is an estate tax. You alluded to that it is the highest in the nation. That is true. Only Hawaii has a exactly the same type of estate tax as Washington State does. However, their exemptions are higher, so they, so those numbers don't get implemented until a higher number compared to Washington. But Washington State, the only community property state that has an estate tax and the highest in the nation. And we talked about some of the specifics last week in what those numbers are and what it looks like. And we also talked about that there is a lot of movement in Washington State. They a short time ago, the estate tax threshold was risen, but then again, the estate tax bracket, how much tax you would have to pay, was jacked up. But then it came back down because we have the millionaires tax. And so is it possible that in the future, specifically if the millionaires tax doesn't go through, that the estate tax could be back on the board to be pushed back up? And I think all of this creates a lot of insecurity in people. So the problem is that we keep talking about taxes, and yet there's very few solutions. And so many individuals are thinking, is it just best if I get out? Is it best if I just find another place? And it's a hard conversation. And last week at the very end of the show, I said, look, if you have other family issues, if you've already been thinking towards that, about leaving the state and moving to an area that has better taxing policies, but yet if you move to Arizona, then you have an income tax versus the estate tax and sales tax, and they have a sales. So, so taxing policies are always going to be wherever you go.
Sure.
You cannot escape
death and
them.
Taxes.
You cannot escape them.
Right.
So the question is, what do some of the numbers say? But more importantly, where do you want to be? And escaping for political reasons may not always be the best final decision. Is it a part of the discussion? Sure. Should it be the primary part of the discussion? Even as someone who deals with planning and taxes all the time, I really encourage people to not take that approach. And there's just so many phenomenal things in Washington State, which is why we love to live here.
Yeah, it's hard to think about leaving just over this issue because compared to other states, I think Washington's primo.
Maybe
California in some ways. But Washington is
Yeah, we've got the coastlines. We've got
mountains.
We've got nature. We've got mild winters and not as hot a summer. And so the list goes on of why people would want to be here. Mm. And one of the primary reasons they would not want to be here is because of the current flux in taxation.
I do know people who've left because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had many clients talk about it and many even pull the trigger. Mm. But so all of this then leads to this question, which is, well, if I stay, is there a way to then not be exposed to the taxes? And the answer is absolutely. There's absolutely ways that we can begin to do estate planning to protect that more of what God has placed into your hands as a good steward is moved to the areas where it should be moved. And sometimes that's not always to family. That can be to amazing nonprofit organizations, whether they're Christian or non-Christian. There are a lot of nonprofits that are doing excellent work. And in generosity, Generosity is rewarded in estate tax planning. And so there's ways to mitigate and even eliminate estate taxes if indeed that would be a large goal of your planning and what you want to do. And so one of the primary ways that we assist in maneuvering and or setting up a better taxing system for estate taxes is through a revocable living trust. And of course, over the years, that has been the instrument of choice that I talk about a lot versus a will instrument. So let me do a brief review, which is there's two primary instruments that you can utilize to do estate planning. One is called a will, and that is typically a more rudimentary instrument. And a will does a couple things great. It tells us who your beneficiaries are. It tells us who is going to be in charge of your estate should you die. That's also known as an executor or a personal representative. And then it gives court instructions. And if you have minor children, very, very importantly, it talks about guardianships. So those are the four primary things that a will package can do. Tell us who receives it. It can tell us who closes the estate. It gives court instructions and it names guardians. Now, there's one thing that I did not mention, which is it has no tax language in it. It does not. It is not sophisticated enough and it is rudimentary, so it does not include tax savings clauses that allow us then to ensure that we can take care of or utilize specifically in married couples that exemption power, the exempt amount for each individual that would not be exposed to an estate tax. So in addition, I mentioned that there's a lot of court language inside of a will. So that naturally should be kind of triggering people to think of, oh, a will then is typically utilized to go through the probate process because that's where court instructions happen. And that is oftentimes true. So a will for which is better than having nothing because you have specific instructions of what's going on with your estate. You can also put in instructions with your personal property. So-and-so gets my wedding ring. So-and-so gets the painting on the wall that's valuable. Or these items, which are heirlooms to our family, get passed to certain individuals. All of those are very, very good things and need to be addressed and need to have our voice on them. So a will does these things, and that is a good thing. However, it does not accomplish the taxation issues, nor does it protect or hold money for the long term. And so now there is a third instrument that I want to briefly address.
Okay.
And that third instrument is called a testamentary trust.
Okay.
Now, there's only one instance when by law I'm required to use that type of an instrument. Otherwise, I never use it. It is more of an antiquated way of doing estate planning, which is many estate planners, and it's very templated, would use a will. Most wills are templated. They're generally, because of their simplicity, are not handcrafted or adjusted specifically for your circumstance. A testamentary trust then is where an attorney has tax language and puts it into the will. And then upon death, that a will then springs into action. So a will only comes to life at your death, okay? And now the tax language comes to life. However, for most married individuals, even for most single individuals, there are joint assets. So my wife and I would have a joint bank account, which means joint is that if my wife survives me, she wins the bank account. That doesn't go to my will. So if it never goes to my will, then how does any of the taxing language ever attach to the bank account? My IRAs, I would probably leave my wife as my beneficiary. How does it ever get to the taxing language within the will? My investment accounts, we use joint if we had a will. Our house would be joint. So all of these assets now are jointly owned, which means that the surviving spouse automatically, by law, holds them in their hands, and nothing ever goes to my will where the taxing language is. So in other words, my proposition is that the taxing language ends up being useless, because while estate planning attorneys put the taxing language into the will, they don't design the estate to actually go to the will and go through the probate process. So therefore, if nothing ever goes there, the taxing language can never cover that asset. Hmm. So then let's enter into a revocable living trust. Revocable, meaning full power and control. You can change anything during your lifetime. Living, it's a document that you create during your lifetime and actually move all your assets to it. Save a few. We don't put IRAs, for example. And I mean IRA as a broad a title for any and all retirement assets, including Roth IRAs. Okay. All of those have tax deferred statuses. Those must remain in your name. So most, if not all, of your assets are intended to go into the revocable living trust. So if I had the Smiths that I was working with and the Smiths had the Smith Family Trust, then we would want to take their bank account instead of their names on it, and their house instead of jointly, and their investments instead of jointly. And we'd want to put all of those into the Smith Trust. And that's because those instructions now are going to cover or go around those assets. And that's what we want, because when someone passes away, the trust doesn't die. So the trust then has instructions, including taxing language, that will cover the assets continuously. I think that a revocable living trust also does a lot of other very convenient things during your lifetime. Number one, if you had any change of heart. So let's say you put in one church, but then you wanted to support a different church, or one missionary, but they retire, and that you wanted to support one organization, but they either shut down or they had a change of direction. And so you wanted to make an adjustment. Well, you go back to the into the trust. You make the change in the document, and because all the assets are held by that document, all the assets change to that new instruction. So updating your estate plan is far more simplistic. If indeed you had charities tucked in your will, but you had beneficiary designations to your kids on your bank account, investment, IRA, then the charity in your will is actually not going to participate in any of those assets, because, again, when we use a transfer on death or a beneficiary designation, it never goes to the will. So therefore, the charity that you wanted to give 10% to never receives the 10%, because the plan was never set up properly. It was done to try to avoid probate instead of actually get to the will. So it's more inconvenient, and most estate plan visions are not realized when using a will instrument. Even some of the most simplistic, rudimentary desires, such as, I want to give a gift to my church when I die. That is not going to be realized if you use a will and you use all your assets on beneficiary designated. So a revocable living trust is able to hold taxing instructions, whereas a will, even if it does, there is a high probability that those instructions will never be realized.
Okay, we'll discuss that a little bit more after a quick break here. Current tax environment in Washington State, how you can do proper estate planning with Paul Grant. How do people get in touch with you, Paul, for help?
Yeah, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, make appointments, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the current tax environment in Washington State and how you can do proper estate planning for that. Kind of wrapped up that last segment with the statement that if you want to save taxes, it's really a trust you need, not a will.
Yeah, the right instrument is really necessary. And the bottom line is that if the assets never get pulled into the plan where all the tax language is, then that asset will pass it'll be ran around the taxing language, and that doesn't accomplish the purpose. Yeah. So a revocable living trust, a holding container where all your assets go into, all the assets even during your lifetime are surrounded by those taxing instructions versus a will. The taxing instructions don't start until you die, and very few assets actually are pulled into the will by design because people want to avoid probate. Well, a revocable living trust can do both. It can avoid probate when properly done, solve taxing issues when properly done, and many other things.
Okay, well, are there other taxes that need to be considered in estate planning besides the estate tax?
Yeah. So an estate tax is one of them. There's both a federal estate tax and there is a Washington state estate tax.
Now, but income tax currently in Washington.
In Washington, I would disagree. I mean, so I don't see how how the capital gains tax could be considered an excise tax. I think that is a legal fallacy, and it is the Supreme Court getting to a conclusion by breaking legal protocol. Mm. So that was not properly done, and it's unfortunate. And so we'll see what happens with the income tax as it is implied to the millionaires.
Which contributes to this instability and a lot of angst about the current tax environment in Washington.
Yeah, so even with that instability, proper estate planning is really required because there are so many other taxes. Now, there's income tax that we're always worried about. Well, that's your CPA's job to assist you really with the income tax. That's not me. But as far as how an inheritance is then taxed in the hands of an inheritor, that is me. And so, so did you know that a properly, well-designed trust can actually save your inheritor's income tax on an annual basis after you've passed away? And that would be shocking even to most CPAs and even to a lot of attorney colleagues. So a well-designed trust can actually – it's moving assets to those that you love, but in the right way. So in the right way is, did we accomplish the estate tax protections to the best of our ability over your assets so that they pass estate tax free, or at least highly mitigated estate taxing. And not only that, but is it handed off so that your beneficiaries can utilize their inherited trust in the best way? And so there are opportunities then to hand off an inheritance to the next generation or to those that you love in a better taxing environment and a more stable taxing environment. And that includes estate tax, generation skipping tax, and income tax all combined. So let me play this story out really quick. If you have been very blessed in your life and you've done well and you have accumulated some wealth that is going to go to the next generation, if you do not take care of the estate tax at your level and you use a will or you use beneficiary designations or you gift money incorrectly, you give money to the next generation improperly, then what that is going to do is you pay an estate tax at your level after your death just to give a significant amount of money to the next generation. And if they don't resolve the estate tax, it's going to be exposed to an estate tax again. If you have a conservative beneficiary, they use the money with honor and respect, and they don't go on spending sprees, and they don't have holes in their pockets, right? They're not the prodigal son who demanded the inheritance and then squandered it all. By the way, almost 80% of all inheritance is spent within 2 years, no matter what the amount is. Hmm. And so if you get one of the 20 percenters that actually is going to preserve, use it wisely, grow it, then if you didn't resolve the estate tax, you're handing a secondary estate tax to your children so that when they die, it's going to be exposed again, or they have to spend a lot of money to resolve it at their level. When a properly designed trust is created, it can actually reduce and eliminate the estate tax generation by generation. And so it's not just your estate tax that we're thinking about. We need to think in terms of generational wealth and generational legacy. God thinks about generations. He's very generationally minded. He wants us to do well in our spiritual lives and in our financial lives so that we can hand a spiritual legacy and a financial legacy to the next generation so that when they were raised in the way that they should go and they do not depart from it, they will be responsible spiritually and financially and hand it off to the next generation, and it can perpetuate the building of the kingdom of God and help society perpetually. So God is very generationally minded. We need to be generationally minded. And you go, Paul, I don't have that much. I have a home and I have a modest investment account and a modest IRA. But if it is passed in the right way and if it is held onto and utilized with integrity, does it have the opportunity to grow? Does it have the opportunity to continually perpetuate, to do great work? And my philosophy and what I would envision is, yes, it could. So even if you're starting with a modest estate, what is the vision that you have that you want to pass off? And when we have beneficiaries that are going to honor, respect, and use what is given to them well and for kingdom purposes, then that can be handed generation to generation. So the estate tax can be cut off. And it can be cut off perpetually. A better taxing every single year with income taxes, when done properly, can be handed to the next generation. And lastly, if I received an inheritance, the IRS expects me to spend it all. They expect me to be a part of the 80% group. And so they don't believe I'm going to be a part of the 20% group. So if I am a part of the 20% group, do you know that without proper estate planning, that when I die, if I held it into a trust, that it actually gets taxed again when it goes to my kids? Mm. It's called a generation skipping tax. So Proper estate planning should resolve all three of these taxes and give a greater sense of security, a greater foundation, not just for you, but for your family to build on. Not just because you have a tax issue. You may not have a tax issue, but what is the next generation going to do with it? Are they going to take the vision and run with it, or are they going to be the 80 percenters? So there are other estate and other tax issues that should be considered when we have this big conglomerate discussion of taxes. But also, if you have a special needs child, if you have someone who doesn't manage money well, look, not everyone manages money well. It's not everyone's gifting. It doesn't mean they're a bad inheritor. It means they don't have that specific skill set or haven't learned the skill set of managing money. That's fine. A trust could be a great instrument to put some really good financial boundaries and or tools within it so that they can use it over the rest of their life if that would be important to you. Protect that special needs child. You don't have to disinherit them. So there are always other family values, special needs considerations. What if you wanted to leave something to grandchildren, but they're younger or they're in their 20s and you wanted to leave something a little more significant to them? What if you've lost a child and it's going to go to that child's children? So in other words, only a specific couple of grandchildren who are already through the ringers because they've lost parents. These things need to be looked at. And there's so many more reasons than just tax to use a revocable living trust. It's why I often say it is the choice instrument to do estate planning by. It's more flexible for the creator, easier to change, holds all your assets, protects you during your lifetime, and we can implore a vision that you have so that this can be a generational blessing if indeed that would be your vision.
Okay, proper estate planning in the current tax environment, the last couple of shows. Very timely discussion. And if you need help with this subject in your estate planning, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.